A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
HarperCollins presents Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Neve, Helena, Elle, and Leonie, four lifelong friends who also happen to belong to the oldest coven in the United Kingdom. When oracles predict the genocide of all witches, the women must choose where their allegiances lie, with the coven or with each other. The New York Times called Her Majesty's Royal Coven superb and charming. From best-selling author Juno Dawson comes a brand new fantasy trilogy for fans of A Discovery of Witches or The Craft. Out now in hardback and audiobook, narrated by Nicola Coughlan, star of Bridgerton.
Her Majesty's Royal Coven by Juno Dawson.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast where we take the timeless questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. As ever, you are listening to Juno Dawson and Dylan B. Jones, and this week we are joined by another very special guest, an amazing author and a friend of mine. It's Bethany Rutter. Hi, Bethany.
Hi. It's me. Hello. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much. I'm delighted.
Welcome to So I Got to Thinking. Bethany, you have recently released a new book. It's called Welcome to Your Life. Welcome to our podcast.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about Welcome to Your Life, please.
So Welcome to Your Life is a romantic comedy. It's my first novel for adults. And it is about a gal called Serena who is meant to be getting married on the day that we meet her, but she decides at the last minute that she cannot go through with it and she cannot bear the thought of knowing what everything that will happen to her in her life looks like, and she just needs to start again. And she sort of plunges headfirst into the world of like dating, new job, new friends, and I guess it's about her trying to figure out what kind of person she is and what kind of life she thinks she deserves and wants to pursue.
Amazing. I've not read it yet. I read your YA book, No Big Deal, which was amazing. So
I'm
very much looking forward to it. If you've not read any of Bethany's books, they're just full of heart. They understand women really well. I think they understand modern life really well. If you are a fan of Sex and the City, I assure you, you will enjoy Bethany's novels. Some Bashar to check them out from all good bookshops. This week on the podcast, we have been continuing our exploration of season 5. We've been watching season 5, episode 5, plus 1 is the loneliest number. So much to say. So much to talk about. But before we go, Dylan, as ever, do you have a potted synopsis?
I do, yeah. So it's Carrie's book launch. Vanity Fair don't have a table at Carrie's book launch. So it's the hottest event in town, mainly thanks to Samantha and I can never remember her name, Carrie's publicist, Amy Sedaris.
Courtney Masterson.
Mainly thanks to the two powerhouses, two amazing New York women who put on this incredible and completely unrealistic event. The Carrie's book launch.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah, because you guys have both launched books, so can get into that. And then nice, interesting stuff for Miranda. I enjoyed the Miranda stuff. Miranda, a guy comes back from her past.
Chuck Bass's dad comes back.
Yeah, Robert John Burke, who's one of those who's in like everything, like CSI, Boston, Miami, and New York, like all of that. So he comes back and she is determined to not let having a baby affect her sex life as a single woman.
Quite right.
Charlotte, not much for Charlotte. She's dating like
Bunny.
Bunny comes crashing back into the show. And yeah, Samantha gets a chemical peel.
Okay, so much to talk about. I actually have, I know we've dismissed Samantha gets chemical peel. I have a lot to say about the feminism of cosmetic interventions, actually.
Yeah.
So let's begin at the top. I was so glad. So I spoke to Bethany weeks and weeks and weeks ago about which episode would you like to do? Mm-hmm. And Bethany said this one right away. And I can only imagine it's because of the amazing portrayal of the publishing industry.
Yeah, which is completely realistic, completely chimes with our collective experiences, I'm sure. It's always funny to see publishing in TV and film. And I think it's the same with like the art world as well. You know, when people go to like these openings and it's like, I've been to openings, they do not look like that. And yeah, it's always fun.
And also my brief stint when I spent a year working at a fashion magazine, I thought it was going to be like The Devil Wears Prada, and I had a very rude awakening.
What was it like? Because I've never worked for a fashion magazine, so I still think it's like Devil Wears Prada.
The office was a cupboard in Notting Hill, and I just remember a Sports Direct, one of those huge Sports Direct mugs that was growing mold because it had been there for so long. That was my first day.
Yes.
So yeah, not exactly The Devil Wears Prada.
Enid Frick would never. Enid Frick is, I mean, we'll talk at great length about Enid as my all-time favourite Sex and the City character. But the book launch, one, so I think I've just published my 12th novel, but one of my novels, and if it wasn't even a novel, it was my book of essays, skirted into the orbit of Carrie's book launch when we did the Gender Games launch in 2017. But it all came from me. So I want to know, and this is my question to Carrie's publisher, who is paying for this? Because I think when Hachette released the Gender Games, did they put some money behind the back? I don't know. But we did it at the library in London, which is just off.
It's on St. Martin's Lane, isn't it?
That's right. Well,
it's now a fried chicken restaurant. It's gone. It's been replaced.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, I'm genuinely quite sad about that.
It was such a nice little club, wasn't it? Like a nice little place to do little parties. It was great. And now, yeah, it's gone. I guess it just didn't survive the old Panny D.
No. Oh, that's made me genuinely sad. If you scroll way, way back through my Instagram, there are probably some pictures of what it used to be when we launched Gender Games. And they did a speech on a spiral staircase. Oh, actually, we did quite a bougie launch for Clean as well, actually. That was at, like, an event space. And I think with both of those books, it was interesting that they were trying to relaunch my slightly flagging career. Who's laughing now?
Yeah.
I am. And I didn't even need a launch. Just a book people wanted to read, it turns out. That's what you need. I do think, so let's put this launch party on trial. So one of the threads that we've discussed previously on this podcast is how famous is Carrie Bradshaw?
Yeah, that's really interesting because there's a line at the beginning of this episode. You know how it opens with this kind of misdirection where you think she's talking about a wedding? Uh-huh. And, you know, it's like the most important moment in a girl's career. And the next line is, it's not when she has a book launch, it's actually when she finds a publisher. And I was like, I feel like publisher, you know, if you're really famous, publishers tend to find you, you know, rather than it being this kind of thing that she wants and, you know, hasn't been able to achieve. So yeah, I feel like that was the thing that made me go, oh, interesting. Like, yeah, I also asked myself, how famous is Carrie?
Because it's, we know, so Courtney tells her that all of Condé Nast are coming. We know she writes for Vogue. She was recently sexually assaulted at Vogue. GQ are coming. Vanity Fair can't find their table.
There's a dude from The New Yorker, the old dude.
The guy from The New Yorker.
Yeah.
Isaac Mizrahi, the fashion designer, is there. She last year took part in the New York Fashion Week show thing. And it feels like her star quietly ascends through the seasons up to next season. Obviously, she is known by name at Prada and is invited to premieres. So it's interesting that it's almost like the way that the light in the Friends apartment got higher up the building as the season went on. It's a bit like that. I don't think it's anything Carrie's even doing. But like you say, she was approached to publish this book. She was literally stopped on the street by her editor to say, this publisher wants to publish your columns. But it feels like if... So let's use a... So let's do a comparison. Do we think Carrie is Kathleen Moran? Is she Dolly Alderton?
I was just trying
to... Is she not as famous as Dolly Alderton?
I was just trying to think about it. And I think that, like, her fame level doesn't exist. Because, like, I was thinking someone like Dolly Alderton. But if Dolly Alderton walked into Prada, they wouldn't be like, oh, hi, Dolly. How are you?
Okay, so
maybe.
I think it could be maybe Sally Hughes. So someone who is, like, knowledgeable in their sphere, but not, like, a celeb. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm.
Mm. And I think it was slightly unrealistic that she got him, that she get, like you said, Juno, she gets invited to like film premieres. I don't know, but then I guess that's because she knows Smith.
And then sometimes
and
I do. Mm. And I'm a penniless transsexual from Bradford. So you'd be surprised what people get invited
Can
to.
Can you change your Twitter bio to just say that?
I'll get on that, yeah. I'll get right on that. It's oh my God, have I achieved it? Have I finally become Carrie Bradshaw? That was what I wanted when I was 19. Maybe we're now neck and neck. but that said, I'm not getting Condé Nast to come to my book launches. It's mostly my sort of queer friends.
The thing that annoyed me the most about that line, the most ridiculous line obviously was like Vanity Fair can't get a table or haven't got a table. I was like, there aren't any tables at the event.
Yeah, what are you talking about? It's not a wedding.
It's not a sit down thing. Like, it's like a bar type vibe. So why is this line in here? Like, I feel like whoever was, I don't know who wrote it. It had a Michael Patrick King vibe to it though, but so I don't know who wrote, but I feel like
it was Cindy Chupac, a classic.
Oh, Sydney Chupac. Cindy.
Oh, was it? Well spotted.
My husband is obsessed with Sex and the City, so I know, I know all the names. I like Sex and the City a lot, but he has seen it so many times that I'm like, cool, okay.
I love that. what else has she written for? I feel like she's written for loads of stuff. But yeah, I feel like she might have got a bit carried away and just put that line in like, oh, and this.
Also, Anthony Marantina, the theme of your party is white supremacy. White! Everything white!
Yes.
And then, like, the Whiplash moment when he's like, hot pink! Everything's hot pink!
Oh, Cindy Chupac has written everything in the world.
Yeah.
From Everybody Loves Raymond. She also wrote Divorce.
Yes, which I really
liked. Sarah Jessica Parker. Yeah. Do you know, it's such a shame about Divorce. It feels like... I don't know if it's going to be remembered in the grand scheme of SJP's career, is it really? It feels like a bit of a, almost like
footnote.
A bit of a cheese dream, kind of like something we all hallucinated between Sex and the City and Just Like That. So anyway, let's get into Carrie this week, because there's plenty to talk about. I will say right up front that I'm lonely. The loneliness is palpable.
It's palpable.
Yes.
It's my least favourite line of scripted dialogue, possibly in the history of television.
While standing at her book launch. But I kind of liked the... Because I think it was meant to be absurd, surely. Like...
No, I think it was meant to be deadly serious. I think we were meant to be moved.
Yeah, to be like, oh, it's so deep that she's at this book launch and she's so popular, but she's so lonely.
Oh, yes,
that's like
the irony.
Deep. Yeah.
Yes, the dramatic irony.
You can be surrounded by people, but be the only person in the room vibes.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to be sincere in a comedy. And actually, I think Sex and the City... does it very well, actually.
At times,
like a lot of shows, you know, remembering Samantha can't find an orgasm and then she gets the release when she cries instead. You know, so sometimes it does pathos really, really well. This was not one of those moments. Because also it's just a bad metaphor. Because if the loneliness is palpable, like what it's you can feel it, you can smell it. You know, kind of, in what way is it palpable? Can you taste the loneliness?
It's in the cosmos are laced with it. Laced with loneliness.
So it's a big week. It's a big week for Caroline because her book is coming out, but what's causing her to have a heebie-jeebies this week is the fact she is single and she's been single for a while and she's struggling to get a plus one for her book launch, which is her own fault, because I'll tell you why you shouldn't be taking a date to a book launch. Again, agreed. It's not a wedding. Mm. It's just invite your mate.
Yeah.
Just invite someone too busy to worry in Coronation about. Street. Yeah, invite Charlie Kondo. It's just, you don't need a date at your book launch. You want somebody with a lot of Instagram followers.
Charlie Kondo, Danny St. James, Charlie Craggs, done.
Yeah, 100%. Do you have more than 5,000 Instagram followers? I don't care if you're single or not. Please come take a picture of my book and share it with your followers, which is the true meaning of a book launch, may I add. In 2022, if you're having a book launch, it is to create an online moment. And also, I don't know how you feel about this, Bethany. To you, sometimes does the actual book coming to market feel a bit anticlimactic?
I mean, it's always nice to like commemorate something happening, but
yeah,
I feel like obviously for us, for the people that write the books, like this has been a thing for such a long time that by the time everyone gets to buy it, we're like, well, I'm already on to the next thing. So, you know, I'm over this piece of shit book. Like, let me keep moving on with whatever genius thing I'm going to write next. I think a lot of authors probably experience the weird, like, this moment in itself is not as exciting as maybe people who are not authors would think it is.
And I'm dreadful. I've said that to so many debut authors, which is just like, oh, by the way, it's a real damp squib. Just make sure you've got something planned for release day. Even if I used to sometimes just take myself to a bookshop just to see it, in the wild, which is always a bit risky because sometimes they're not there on release day, and so you're like, oh, this is disappointing. But I'm always a big fan of saying market, because if you're not going to celebrate your little life achievements, who else will?
So
and that's
true.
Something that Carrie will ponder next season with her Right to Shoes. If you are a single woman, what do you get to celebrate? Answer, your book launch. But Carrie cannot just let herself enjoy this amazing professional moment because she's not dating anyone. But uh-oh, what's that coming over the hill? Is that a burger? Oh,
I was
no.
So shocked when Dylan did your introduction and you did not mention burger. I was like, for me, that's like the headline event of this episode.
Shit. Yeah, and you're right. It's such a meaty episode that I forgot.
Pardon the pun.
It is a good episode, isn't it? Like, despite
its
absurdities. Like, I watched it just now and just had so much fun watching it. I was like,
it's a really good episode.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
It's a really, really strong one.
I have a confession to make. I fancy burger the most of all Carrie's love interests.
Same, and it's so taboo to say it, and we should say it.
Yeah, we should be proud.
Oh my god, this is a new kink. I think burger.
This is like how I fancy Riley from Buffy more than anyone else in Buffy.
Oh no, that's
which
just,
I know
that's
is very
just having eyes. No, that
see?
Is just, that is literally. Do you know? I don't believe anyone who says that Riley isn't the hottest, because he is gorgeous. Just sadly quite a boring character, but
yes.
And it's true also of Berger. Yeah, I think you're right in that by anyone's, although actually I can hear Aiden fans outside my flat and they're crawling up the walls and they're going to kill me, but I think possibly if we're being very scientific and very objective, I think Berger is the most conventionally attractive in lots of ways. He really looks like my ex-boyfriend Martin. I don't think Martin is listening to this podcast, so let's just say his name on the podcast. He looks like my ex-boyfriend Martin a lot, and I didn't notice it until this rewatch. How has this show been airing for 20 years, and I've never put those two, like, but however, within 2 minutes of first meeting the very attractive Ron Livingston, he starts typing on a tiny invisible keyboard. as if he too has an inner monologue like Carrie Bradshaw. But on three occasions, he whips out his flirting invisible keyboard, and it is such an ick. I had to make myself physically sick to get rid of it from my stomach.
I kind of didn't mind a lot of the dialogue between them. I thought, well, it might be also because I think the two actors have good chemistry.
Yes.
But the dialogue was slightly, to use a name that isn't often used anymore, slightly Woody Allen-esque, some of the dialogue. I think they wanted to make it obvious, like, these are two writer, like, writer-minded people.
Yes.
Like, you know when, and you guys will know what I mean by this, like, if you bump it, sometimes like, you meet someone and you just know that they're a writer because of the way that they talk. Does that make sense? And the way that they see
well,
the world.
Well, also they have an invisible keyboard. Yeah. So that's how you know.
But like, they would like comment on like something that like a stranger, do you know what I mean? Like, we do have like this weird narrative in our heads. And I think they captured that quite well. But yeah, the tiny typewriter can go.
when I see my writer friends, I tend not to take my husband or other non-writer friends because writers all together are just quite boring and yeah. We'll talk about sort of it's like
industry
our job,
deep cuts.
Yeah, like you're like, oh my god, did you hear what happened at like Fleet Books, the turf one? You know, kind of like So there is going to be a lot of weird sort of Esperanto that sort of a lot of people don't understand what you're saying. And also, it's strange because as an author or a writer, you're probably quite poorly paid, but also it's a really sort of privileged position. So it's sort of, on one hand, it has no privilege, and on the other hand, it's a very privileged position that isn't going to make sense to a lot of people. And sort of when I've sort of had real kind of career meltdowns, you know, I can sometimes see my non-writer friends sort of look at me a bit like, is this bitch for real? Like, kind of like, what do you mean you missed a deadline? Who gives a shit? They just don't get it. You could tell with the way the episode was edited that we were meant to really be aware that a new love interest had arrived.
Mm. Yeah.
Like little sparkly music and
the shoe, the shot Carrie. Of the shot of Carrie's shoe over the playing card.
And then just her that are doing again, as her performance has evolved, she kind of does this, and I don't know if she's had something done with her teeth.
Right.
But this sort of the face, and I think you know the face, I mean the sort of the slight sort of that little orphan Annie seeing Daddy Warbucks' house for the first time face. Sort of.
Yes.
I'm so sorry that, again, listeners to our audio podcast cannot see my Caroline face.
But you know what we mean. You know what we're doing.
They know what we mean.
It's the lips as well, so the slightly...
Wistful,
I mean, can
wistful.
We do wistful, her wistful kind of enchanted sort of spellbound expression, which I don't think she got with Aiden. I'm not going to name this friend because it's still a very close friend of mine. I have a friend who is very like Carrie in that he just knows when he meets a guy that he likes. It's game over.
Oh, wow.
And it's like he just, whereas I've never been like that. I've never done love at first sight. And it feels like that's what they were trying to convey, I think, with Carrie and Berger.
Oh, the playing cards.
Very manic pixie dream boy.
Yes. Yes.
Very that.
I wonder how they came up with that. I wonder if one of the writers had experienced a skanky trash collector.
Well, in London there are little like space invaders everywhere on the like in like graffitied little pixelated space invaders if you look around, and I pointed that out to Chris when we were early on when we were dating, and I was like, oh, I'm like Berger, like I'm pointing this random thing out.
You're the manic pixie dream boy.
Yeah.
Oh, Dylan, you are a bit of a manic.
I think I am.
Boy.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Do you think you've taught Chris lessons about himself from you being in his life?
Maybe. I think I've. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
You're not a fully fleshed out character in yourself, but Chris has learned from you. So Caroline meets Berger. What do we think? Should Berger have told Carrie he had a girlfriend?
I don't think so, but I love the way that that episode really captures the like brutal gut punch of really fancying someone and then discovering that they have a girlfriend. Because I don't think he left it an inappropriately long time to mention it. I just think it's a situation that whenever it happens at whatever point will feel unfair and you will be mad about it. So he could never have done it right because all she's annoyed about is the fact he has a girlfriend, not the fact that he didn't tell her.
Yeah, and he sort of couldn't have mentioned it really because she wasn't sure if they were on a date, so presumably he wasn't either. So for him to mention he had a girlfriend might have like hurt her feelings if she'd been like, oh, well, I wasn't even thinking about that. So I can see why he didn't mention it.
And the Samantha line makes me cackle even now. Calm down, I just ask if the seat was taken. Which is so true because I'm going to say, like, calm down. No, I agree. I don't think Berger wasn't under any obligation. I know how Carrie feels that twice in my life, I have met someone and thought to myself, you know, oh my God, I see it. I can see it for me. And then you do find out. So once it was, I'm not naming names, it was somebody in the industry and I thought, oh my gosh, this is very Berger actually. And I met somebody at a big fancy swanky party at the South Bank Centre. And then I moved heaven and earth to track them down on social media. And we had texted for quite some time before a partner came into the equation. Mm. And I was a bit like, oh. And then the other one was my other meeting the right man at the wrong time. It's like the Eurovision song. When I was on tour abroad. And so we were literally separated by geography, but I've always sort of felt, gosh, he could have been a soulmate, but alas, he lives in Australia. So there we go. That's the end of that.
In a way, I feel like someone having a partner is like one of the more surmountable obstacles. All they need to do is break up, and that could happen at any time.
And spoiler, it will. Yes, spoiler, it will.
Yes.
Dylan, have you ever been in a Carrie and Berger situation? Have you ever fancied an unavailable person?
Yes. When I was younger, I don't make this mistake anymore, but when I was younger, straight men who, that's a classic I feel like most gay men have been through that. Joy.
it's an absolute rite of passage.
Yeah, totally. It is.
As a queer person, yes. For me, my university flatmate.
Yeah.
Painful.
Yeah.
Oh, such exquisite drama as well. It was delicious. I eked 3 years out of that plot line. One last thing to mention about Carrie before we go to our little break. So she goes to her party. She is lonely. But then I think we have another interesting first, although please correct me if I'm wrong. I think Carrie meets her first mystical black person.
Yes, the cab driver. Yes.
In the form of the limo driver, yeah.
It was a slippery slope due to Louise from St. Louis.
Louise from St. Louis, and of course the very problematic character in Sex and the City 2 as well, the hotel butler.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
So this is a pattern for Carrie in that she meets a person of colour who, again, kind of manic pixie dream girls them in that they are always wise. They open her eyes to some hidden truth about herself that she has not seen. In this case, the nameless limo driver, I checked, and she's played by an actress called Dina Atlantic.
I looked her up as well.
Quite the name.
Amazing. She's been in nothing really.
No, she hasn't acted for a long time. She's now a life coach. Mm. But Dina plays a nameless limo driver who makes Carrie realise that you have to celebrate these wins in life, regardless of whether you're single or not, and takes her for a really sad-looking hot dog. It has to be said.
It's an exciting hot dog. It is a proper New York institution hot dog. So it's not as sad as it could have been. It's, yeah, as far as I could tell, she's at Gray's Papaya, which is a legit, like, New York institution. I was watching an Anthony Bourdain show only last night where he also goes there. So it may look sad, but it is, in fact, quintessentially New York, which would very much appeal to Carrie's main character syndrome.
Nice. Get a bit of intel.
That is... Oh, I love that.
Anthony Bourdain. I love him.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Our boyfriend.
Okay, let's take a little break there. And when we come back, we will discuss Miranda and Charlotte and Samantha's chemical peel. Be right back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, and welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. You are listening to Juno Dawson, Dylan B. Jones, and our special guest star, Bethany Rutter. And we're talking about season 5's plus one is the loneliest number. Carrie is very, very worried that why do we let the one thing we don't have affect the things we do have? And I must admit, I quite like her analogy that in New York, you're always looking for the perfect relationship, the perfect job, or the perfect apartment, which there was a period in my life where I too always slightly, well, that was the goal, wasn't it? When will I have all three?
And it was one of those very, there's like, I would say 7 or 8 extremely memorable Sex and the City lines that like stick with you and have stuck with me, and I think you as well, Juno, for like, and have literally occurred to us at different points in our lives, and this is one of them.
Is that your mantra as well, Bethany? Have you always been on the quest for the perfect relationship, perfect job, and perfect apartment?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they are like the most important, you know, some of the most important things in one's life. I'm not really much of a like career gal, so I've never been sort of motivated by like work and promotions, but I like doing work that I'm interested in. I like where I live, and my husband's very nice, so yeah, I feel like I'm living the dream now.
We are winning. Carrie is losing.
Yes.
Loser. No, I think she has a point in that I wonder if it's human nature to maybe, or maybe it's just me because I'm incredibly kind of like goal focused, and you know, I think it's important that we talk about the fact that I recently was a number one Sunday Times bestseller.
Definitely.
Thanks.
Ding.
And ding, ding. But I will say this, worryingly soon after getting one of the most wonderful phone calls of my life, I turned my attention to, but where will I chart next week?
Oh.
Yeah, I feel like this is a real thing that I say about like publishing and being an author is like, you know, you're always chasing the next thing. And it's like, you're unpublished, you know, you're very early in your writing career. You think getting an agent is the hurdle to jump. You get an agent, then you realize you've got to go on submission and you've got to get a publisher. And then once you've got that, you're like, great, I'm done. I'm set. This is it. And then you realize that no, like your book has to come out and then you have to see like what events you do and, you know, what place you are in the charts. And then even if you experience insane success, like being number one, you're then like, how long will I be flavor of the month for? And what will happen to my next book? And I just feel like it's a real thing that like you have to be very psychologically healthy to deal with that constant like question of like, am I good?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it's a fine line between being like driven in a way that's healthy, because it can be a good thing to be really driven and to push yourself, but it can also mean that you're hard on yourself. Like, it's all relative as well. So like, it doesn't matter. Sometimes it doesn't matter how successful you are. Like Charlie XCX, for example, is always posting these like long Instagram posts about how she feels like she's not reached her goals and she's like still not famous and blah blah blah, and it's like, babe, like chill.
Vroom vroom, you're yeah. Charlie XCX.
Chill. But like, I feel bad for her and for people who have that complex. I can slightly identify with it. I am hard on myself sometimes with like professional and particularly with creative stuff. I'm hard on myself, and definitely was when I was editing a magazine. That drove me insane. So that it was the right decision to not do that anymore. Because I couldn't hack it. I wasn't the right. I think you said, Bethany, you have to be a strong mental capacity. And I didn't, for that particular role, I didn't have it. And I'm a lot happier since leaving it.
Are you feeling good, yeah, Juno, though? Are you feeling like, you know, now that you have got your number one, how are you feeling about the future? Are you feeling good?
Yeah, so it's funny because normally I've spoken at length about how I feel luck and timing play an enormous part in publishing. Because this win came so late in my career, you know, it's 10 years since my first book came out. It does feel earned. It feels like I've kind of worked my socks off. And also I felt on this occasion as well that the publisher had published the book really well. And that has not been true for all of my books. Some of them I haven't been a priority, or they were just published poorly in the middle of January or something. You know, there was always something where you could sort of say, I wish that had been a bit different. Whereas on this instance, I thought genuinely they'd done a really good job with it. So I also wanted it for them as well, because I thought, well, I want their efforts to be rewarded. And so that was good. And I'm sort of... I think because I'm older and because a lot of my books haven't had this kind of sort of sales success, I can recognize it for being extraordinary. You know, most books do not go down instantly so well, you know, kind of. And so I keep reminding myself, which is, you know, you can now legitimately call yourself a bestseller. You can say you're a Sunday Times bestseller. And people can't take that away. And it feels really nice to have something that people can't take back, because success in publishing in any industry is fleeting. And, you know, it sounds mean to sort of single out John Green. But, you know, when I was first published, John Green was the absolute name in young adult fiction. You know, he was the single biggest author in the world. And it feels like his mom and... came and went slightly. It feels he's not as zeitgeisty as he was in 2012, 2013. And so, you know, I've learned, and I know that, you know, just because this book was the number one, the next one might not be. So a bit like with our wise limo driver, just got to celebrate the moment. And so I have celebrated. It's been a very nice feeling. And what's really lovely as well, I think, because the books that tend to really, really hit, it tends to be the celebrities or big American authors. And so what's been really, really lovely is sharing in my little win with a lot of other English authors who similarly to me have been in the game for a long time. And we've earned our dues. And so it has been. It's been really, really nice to have that a little win for the community. And that's why, you know, I'm so thrilled for Alice Osman, who wrote Heartstopper. She's been in the industry for a long time working away as well. So it's nice.
And obviously not to, turn this into a big chat about, like, publishing or whatever, but I thought it was so great that in the same week it was, like, you had a big success and Gabrielle Zevin had a big success. Mm-hmm. And just, I think, because as well, you know, the industry really rewards debuts and is obsessed with debuts and the next big thing. So for two massive books to be by people who have been working away for a long time, like, I felt like as an author, that was really reassuring that, like, it isn't impossible to mid-career have, like, this massive hit.
Thank you. And yeah, I'm constantly saying, and I think I've had to cling to for my own sanity, which is, you were as good as your last novel. And you know, prior to, and probably still, because it's only been out a fortnight, but prior to Her Majesty's Royal Coven, my bestseller was a book called Clean. And I think that was my seventh novel. And when Clean came out, it outsold the first six put together. So I knew, I already knew that you didn't need to be a debut to sell a lot of copies. But what is harder is convincing a publisher that you don't need to be a debut to sell a lot of copies. Mm. You know, I hope there is a shift within the industry. I hope, I've heard a couple of times recently of quite established sort of mid-list authors who've been advised to change their names professionally. And I'm like, really? Jojo Moyes is the other notable example of an author. I think Me Before You was like her 11th book or something. So Jojo had been in the game for a long time when she really went stratospheric. And that was a detour into publishing. But it's a publishing week. We're talking about publishing. Carrie's got a book out. So.
I think Samantha is a good friend throughout this episode. But is a particularly good friend when they're sitting at the table and Carrie's like freaking out. She's like, I don't have a plus one. And, oh, I'm not going to know anyone there. And Samantha's like, look, you're fabulous. You've got a book launch. You're going to have fun. There's going to be straight men at the party. It's going to be great. And Samantha's just so good at, like, uplifting her friends. Like, she's always, like, there supporting them more than, like, any of the other three are, I think.
And how is she rewarded in this episode?
Carrie's told to leave. Carrie's,
it's
like,
so
getting
rude.
A cab. Ugh. Getting it. Oh,
I hate
yeah.
that. Because, you know, you just think about your own life. And if, like, one of your friends had, like, burnt their face off with a chemical peel, wouldn't you be going out of your way to be like, it's not that bad, no one cares, like, no one's looking at you, instead of being like, go home, you're disgusting.
I mean, are we surprised, though?
No. Alas, no.
She was wearing a veil as well. She even went to the effort to wear a veil. God love her. I was deeply amused at how novel the idea of Botox was.
Yeah, that was,
like,
that was quaint, wasn't
that
it?
Joke is very early noughties, because now, obviously, they're dishing out Botox next to chewing gum in WH Smith. So.
Next to the Viagra in Boots. Yeah,
exactly.
While we're, like, slagging off Carrie, the other part that I hated was when she said the gay guy is the single girl's safety net.
That's what they're for. They're not fully formed human beings.
That's what we're for. We just sit around at home, like, drinking Cosmopolitans and listening to Madonna, just waiting for a phone call from one of our girlfriends.
I like the idea that you just sit in a darkened room in silence.
Yeah,
just waiting to be activated.
As soon as the phone rings, you unmute Madonna when the phone rings. So it's just always going on in the background. Oh, hi, I'm just in a dance party.
Yeah. But yeah, again, not surprised. Like, it's very Caroline behaviour.
Poor Stanford. Poor Stanford, though. But Samantha, yeah. So Samantha and Botox, I cannot remember a time before Botox. And also that's just bad writing, because I am full of Botox, and I assure you, people know when I'm angry. I do not have to tell people I am so angry.
Oh yeah, that was so weird, that bit. Like, what? Very strange.
Written by somebody who had never had Botox. Yeah. Because you don't have to tell people. Well, maybe in the last 20 years, practitioners have gotten better at giving Botox. So you don't end up with that kind of frozen Nicole Kidman in the film 9 face, kind of. But I think Samantha, I mean, we're very pro-Samantha on this podcast anyway, but she's right. You know, she should not be judged for having cosmetic intervention in a society which demands certain beauty standards, especially of women. And I'm a big, that's why I've always on this podcast been so open about the fact that I have my Botox once a year. I get my lips filled maybe every 18 months. As I go into my 40s, I have no doubt in my mind I will continue to have little bits done. And I quite look forward to being, you know, in my 60s and getting my Real Housewife face. Like, and that's the future I see for myself. I think what is sadder almost is when people pretend they haven't. And I mean, I'm going to name her because Miss Jennifer Lopez Affleck claiming she's never had any work done.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
Oh.
I mean, come on, Jenny. Jenny from the block. I think you haven't aged in 30 years. I think we can assume something is being touched by an angel.
Yeah, I do think it's a bit, I mean, we've discussed this before, haven't we? But I think it's irresponsible, isn't it? Because it makes people feel bad about themselves if you pretend that you haven't.
Do what you want. I think, okay, Caroline is clearly very anti-chemical peels. but Samantha wants one. So who is she to be shamed?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I really enjoyed Enid, Candice Bergen.
Oh my god, so good. God, there's so much happening in Sensor.
There is a lot, yeah. That's
welcome
why
to
I was
this
like
2-hour edition of So I
Yeah.
But she was so good, like the awkward lunch scene, like her it was like flawless, like forced politeness acting when she was like, Do you really want me to eat with you? Like, and then I did like when Carrie was like, Enid, come on, like I'm trying, like you've got to give me something. I found that funny.
Candice Bergen is so good. I mean, she's so good in everything, but her role as Enid could have been so Miranda Priestly. It could have been so over the top.
Yeah.
But I think she plays it just this extraordinary level. I loved her creeping up the stairs.
Yeah.
like the Grinch that stole Christmas. And because she's seen her married lover. That was amazing.
And then an amazing line when she's like, that's the key to having it all. Stop expecting it to look like what it's going to look like. It's the key to the full line, and it's the key to relationships. I mean, yeah, she's right. I'm not sure about the full line part, but apart from that, she's right.
I wish she had done more. I think she only does maybe a couple more episodes in the whole oeuvre now. She comes back because she has designs on Alessandra Petrovsky, but
and she's also in Splat.
Yes. That's where she tries to muscle in on Alessandra, yeah.
Oh yeah.
But I feel like I'd rather have a character like that where you wish they were in it. So that's how I feel about Amy Sedaris in anything, where I'm just so, I love her so much, and I'm just so happy she's turned up, that even if she's in like one episode of one series of Broad City or Girls Five Ever, I'm like so happy she's there. And it really lifts it for me that I'm like, you know what? You can be in one episode. I'm okay with that. I'm just happy to see you.
That's a really good point, actually.
See also Catherine Hahn in anything.
Yeah, exactly. There's these lady actresses that you're like, I get it. You're not going to be a leading lady for whatever sexist reasons, but I'm just happy to see you.
Exactly. Which brings us neatly to our C plots of Charlotte and Miranda. Bunny. Bunny's back. Speaking of those actors who will always elevate any episode, Sternhagen is back as Bunny McDougal, and she's back. She's back again next week. Walking in on Charlotte having her sexy time. Her body double gets her boobs out and she has sex. And then, Bunny rocks up the next morning.
And it transpires that Charlotte, that Bunny owns the flat that Charlotte is living in.
Yeah.
Which I was a bit it's slightly ridiculous that Charlotte just didn't check this. Like, she just kept living in this flat and she was like, oh, I'm just going to live here. Like, I don't really know who owns it or what's happening, but, you know, it'll be fine.
My stuff is here, so it's fine.
Yeah, come on, Charlotte.
Can you imagine, though, that the line, it wasn't Trey's to give? I mean, that would have sent shivers down your spine, wouldn't it? Kind of like, I knew that Trey came from old money. Mm. He doesn't own anything. Worrying. Charlotte's trauma this week, that ties in loosely with Carrie and Miranda's plot, is that it's about, not really to do with the question of letting the things you don't have affect how you feel about the things you do have, but it's more about the things that we don't like saying aloud.
Mm.
So Carrie has issues around the word lonely, which I think is an interesting one, actually, because I think we're having a conversation about loneliness now that feels quite new and quite modern. And I think certainly for 2002, a single woman in her 30s admitting she was lonely would be quite...
Yeah, and as cheesily as it was delivered, I did that she said it.
Yes. It's the palpable line. It's just
that's what took it too far. Yeah.
Yeah. Just if Carrie had just said, "I'm lonely,"
yeah,
and Charlotte had gone, "No, you're not," and Carrie would have gone, "I'm lonely," that would have been effective. Not loneliness is palpable, but Charlotte doesn't want to admit she's divorced, which is obviously comes with stigma, or especially I think for women. Meanwhile, Miranda has a secret baby. She wants to fuck Bart Bass.
Mm.
So she doesn't tell him that she's got a baby.
Mm.
Should she have told him? Does she need to? The scene where she's making out and the baby is screaming did freak me out, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been able to be in that situation. I wouldn't be able to have sex while a baby was screaming.
Let's find out. I'm going to loan you a baby, and I want to see if you and Chris can perform sexually while screaming babies in the next room.
I found the storyline really touching. It reminded me of a couple of episodes ago when, I think the first episode of season 5, when Miranda's concerned that her lifestyle's going to change because she has a baby, and this continuing exploration of it, I think, is really quite important and quite really well played by Cynthia Nixon as always. Interesting. And I like the fact that it was just kind of, he wasn't an asshole really. He was just
This isn't for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And she accepted it. She was like, I've got a baby and that's life. That's how I read it anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, and I liked the way that the conclusion to, kind of Miranda's thoughts on this, can I have it all kind of thing, which is, obviously one of the overarching themes of all Sex and the City and all women's media ever, is kind of I can't really. And, my life has changed and it doesn't serve me to pretend to myself and to other people that my life hasn't changed because I have a baby. And I kind of like that. It feels truthful rather than being like, no, I'm a mom who can fuck and have my baby and nothing matters. Nothing has changed. It feels more truthful, I think.
Yeah. I liked as well the admission there was a note that Miranda was delighted to be back at work. And it sort of suggested that that was problematic in some way, that politically incorrectly, Miranda was delighted to be back at work. Why is that politically incorrect?
Yeah, I noted down that line. I thought it was odd. But then 20 years ago, I guess, maybe that's why. But still odd that they said.
And also America as well, the notion that sort of Miranda should want to give up her incredibly hard-won career in law and to just stay home. It's strange, but I know, obviously, maybe it's because of where I live in the South, living in the city, but a lot of my friends who've had babies have really looked forward to going back to work, just because it's to use a different part of the brain, to be able to have adult conversation.
Mm.
I think it's about, you know, sort of, I think a lot of my friends, you know, did make friends through, I think, is it not NCP, that's a car park, NCT groups?
Yes.
Yeah, NCT groups, you know, and so you were spending a lot of time talking about babies and sleeping and feeding. And I think my friends liked being able to go back to an arena where they could talk about professional matters because, you know, you can. We all contain multitudes and parents are capable of spinning a lot of plates. But like Bethany said, I agree that it's nice that Miranda recognises, you know, her life is going to change. And that's okay. Things are different now. We're all on a journey. We're evolving.
Yeah.
In answer to Carrie Bradshaw's question, do we have an answer? Why do we let the one thing we don't have affect all the things we do have?
It's just classic human, isn't it? It's like, you know,
yeah.
Authors fixating on like one-star review and ignoring the fact that like 90% of their reviews are like 4 or 5 stars. Like, it's just classic human behavior. It's just really, yeah, we let these dark things overshadow the good things in a way that we never let the good things eclipse the bad things.
I was going to say exactly the same. You took the words out of my mouth.
How do you think, how can we as a species then focus on the light?
I don't know. I think you just see it in proportion and, you know, that it is a small proportion of the human experience. And most of, at least for me, like most of the things in my life are good. So
surround yourself with like friends like Samantha who will pull you out of the, who will tell you like you're being silly, focus on the good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, we were not put on this earth to suffer. We were simply not. And yeah.
I think that's a lovely place on which to end. Yeah. We do focus on the things we don't have. So get yourself some friends in your life who will remind you of the things you do have.
Hmm.
What a lovely moral to end on.
So
Bethany, what are you working on now?
I'm editing my next book, my next adult book, which will be out next year. So I've, I'm most of the way through editing that. And then, yeah, who knows what will happen to me.
Well, good luck. Thank you very, very much for coming on.
It's been a delight.
So I got you thinking. Good luck with Welcome to Your Life as well. And Dylan and I will see you next week when we discuss Critical Condition.
Mm.
Nina Katz is coming and she has a face.
The face.
Heather Graham rocks her. A lot to
season
discuss.
Season five is wild, isn't it? Like, that's just very wild.
Strange season.
It's such a short season as well. Like, they pack a lot in.
Yeah. Maybe it was all, maybe everything that's in season 5 was originally supposed to be, maybe that's why it's so hectic, because they smushed it all together. But I'd rather that than there being filler episodes, so, you know.
This is true.
So true.
Yeah.
Okay, we will join you next week. Until then, don't forget to like and subscribe and do all those nice things, and we will see you next Tuesday. Bye for now.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.